The Breast Cancer Monologues featured original music by Maria Estevez and interviews and writings by Jan Barros, Rita McDonough, Hilda Bengston, Don Cottrell, Marjorie Holland, Barbara Strasburger, Leslie Lichka, Tina Rodriguez, Ty Brown, Clara Welsh, Maria Pasco, Caroline Acune Aguilertas, Monica Benson Barros, Suzanne, Elizabeth, Joy, Michelle, Carolyn, Monica, Jeanette, Nancy, and Mira. If you'd like to hear the complete one-hour version of the Breast Cancer Monologues, visit StageTheLetterNStudio.com to find out how you can win a download of the entire documentary, or visit MediaRights.org, capital MediaRights.org, to purchase your own copy of the Breast Cancer Monologues. This project was made possible by the Regional Arts and Culture Council and the Oregon Arts Commission. For more info about breast cancer, visit breastcancer.org and bcaction.org. For Stage and Studio, I'm Dimae Roberts.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Here and There, audio postcards from Earth on Tuesday, October 9th from 7 to 9 p.m. at OMSI in Portland.
Here and There, audio postcards from Earth is an all-ages and ability-inclusive event featuring nature sounds and field recordings in immersive surround sound from scientists and artists local and abroad from some of the world's most remote locations.
Listen to these places while sitting under the shifting stars from that time and place in nature's memory. Again, that's Here and There, audio postcards from Earth on Tuesday, October 9th from 7 to 9 p.m. at OMSI, 1945 Southeast Water Avenue, Portland.
More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Coming up next on KBOO, Art Focus, Amanda Clem interviews local Portland artist LaBrie Rich.
I'm Amanda Clem, and you are listening to Art Focus on KBOO 90.7 FM. Joining us today is local Portland artist LaBrie Rich. LaBrie is a visual artist who works in a variety of media, including collage, mosaic, and fiber. Her work emphasizes experimentation in materials and processes and often explores the realm between representational and the abstract. LaBrie's work has been shown in diverse settings, including museums, galleries, storefront windows, and art vending machines. In 2014, she presented work in a two-person exhibition in Fukuoka, Japan, and in 2013 and 2015, she attended the Rauschenberg residency in Captiva, Florida. LaBrie is also the owner of Pen Felt, a felt-making studio in Portland, Oregon. Welcome, LaBrie. Thank you for being here.
I'm happy to be here, Amanda.
It's really nice to see you. So LaBrie has a show right now up at Wolf Gallery in Southeast Portland on Southeast Ankeny and Southeast 28th, and it's called Grocery, and it is a series of 20 soft sculptures. They're hand-felted replicas of our beloved grocery store favorites. My personal favorite being the Jif peanut butter. I think we know. Obsessed with it a little bit. It's like soft and it just like drew me in immediately. And I think as soon as I saw you, like your process shots on that, I was like so looking forward to it. And so tell us a little bit about the show and how it came to be. Like when you work on a variety of projects and probably many at the same time. Mm-hmm. And at one point, do you realize that you've got a show coming together?
Well, I've been making these replicas of food products for a long time. Here and there, I've done a few commissions and I've done a few window storefronts that I made sculptures for. And I've always really enjoyed the process. But I haven't devoted myself to making a full body of work of this type. And last October, early October, so it's been almost exactly a year, I was feeling super down. It's like, you know, the Trump thing. It's all of the stuff going on. And I just felt like I needed some comfort. And so I made a felt Cheez-It bag.
Cheez-Its.
And I just made it because I wanted to. And I love the Cheez-It logo. I love that font.
Yep.
I love that big old Cheez-It on the front that has those little pieces of salt on it.
They're really super crystallized up close.
Oh, yeah. Shot. Love that red. So I made this Cheez-It bag, and I posted a picture on Instagram, and people went bananas. Like, people were crazy for this. And it was really interesting to observe, oh, maybe this is what we need right now. Like, I loved making it. It made me happy to make it. And for people seeing it, people were so excited. So I just thought at that point, like, oh, maybe I should do a body of work like this. That seems like it would be good for me and good for everybody. Mm-hmm. So I sent an image to Zemi Barr and Shannon O'Connor at Wolf Gallery. And they wrote back in like 5 minutes and they were like, yes, let's do this as a show.
Schedule it.
So we scheduled it, and then so I spent the last year making these grocery store food items out of felt, and it's been really fun.
How did you decide which items to make? I mean, was it aesthetically driven mostly, or are they really nostalgic for you personally? Are there stories? Did you've done a lot of commissions, and so were any of them commissions?
None of these were commissions, but right away when I started making this work, people would come up to me and like grab me by the arm and say, you have to do Honey Grahams.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, there would be like strong, fiery feelings about what food items I needed to make and felt. So that was really fun. So I've had a running list going for, you know, for the whole year of options.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's some kind of combination of a food product that we have, or a lot of us have this nostalgic feeling for or intimacy with, and then also just visually what packages I think would look good rendered in felt. The food companies redo their logos like every 3 or 4 years, and so some of them are kind of ugly now, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I really want to do Velveeta cheese, but it's really ugly, so I need to find a vintage Velveeta,
yes.
I think, to do.
Maybe like a 70s.
Totally, yeah. And when
I
really first got started, I took myself to Safeway and I just spent like 2 hours with a cart, and I went through the whole of the Safeway on Hawthorne and I just spent $60 on food products just for the packaging. And so then I've had those up on my windowsill in my studio for the whole year. And so those have been kind of speaking to me and informing, you know, what piece I might want to make next.
Yeah. Are they full of the snacks still, or are they just the empty bags?
They're usually full of the snacks, and then most of the snacks we eat like when it's time to make the felt thing, or I feed them to the crows if they're not delicious.
It's like a birth offering.
Totally.
This piece. Okay, so actually that brings me actually to a process question, because
yeah.
these are life size, these are to scale facsimiles of
right.
these grocery store items.
Yeah.
So following along on Wolf Gallery's Instagram, it's exciting when you follow along on a gallery. Sometimes you're privy to some behind the scenes footage or a little bit further look into how a piece operates, and they've posted a couple of pictures of unscrewing the peanut butter and unscrewing the A1 sauce, and
yeah.
so those are actually functioning vessels.
Yeah.
Are you using how are you sculpting these?
Well,
to scale?
The felt aspect, I use 1 millimeter wool felt that's from Germany, and then I do needle felting and stitching onto that two-dimensional surface, and then I wrap the three-dimensional form and then sew it on. The things that are boxes, like the Ritz box and the Arm & Hammer baking soda box, like those have pink foam in them that a lot of sculptors use.
Mm-hmm.
But things that are round and three-dimensional, those have the original jar inside.
I see.
And I learned to do that because I did a Campbell's soup can, of course, I had to.
Yes.
And at first I thought, oh, this will be easy for me to sculpt out of pink foam. I'll just sculpt that cylinder and then I'll, you know, wrap the felt on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that I could sculpt a cylinder. No, my friend, I cannot. It was so interesting to like wrap the felt around it. And then from across the room, it's like it looked like a kid's toy. It was immediately didn't have the precision, and it wasn't believable as a facsimile.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow that really changed the content of it, and it changed maybe the authority of the object. I'm
yeah.
not exactly sure.
No, I know what you mean. It's got a little bit more weight to
yeah.
it, just in its rigidity.
Yeah. And those curves,
sense.
You know, I think we know those products really well visually because we've seen them our whole lives. Mm-hmm. I think we know what a Jif jar looks like. And if it almost looks like a Jif jar, it kind of looks like a toy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the 3D things that are jars or complicated shapes, those have the original vessel inside.
Yeah. The Campbell's soup can, iconic.
Mm-hmm. Warhol. Yeah, that's what started
homage.
Pop. Yeah. Well, obviously, I had to do the Campbell's can. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I think this work shares the enthusiasm of the everyday that pop art has. So there's that similarity. I think where it differs is that where most pop art is more sort of slick multiples kind of way of working, this work is each piece is very involved mm-hmm. and sort of painstaking detail. So mm-hmm. it has this element of handcraft to it that kind of takes it in a different place.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of people situate the work in pop art because they're seeing logos.
Yes.
Yeah.
The graphic quality, the logos.
Mm-hmm. Felt is disarming, yeah. And it's a humble material. And so this work does, it seems like a lot of people feel a connection to it. And I think part of it's the material and the level of detail. I think for some people, it's the pop art mm-hmm. element. For some people, it's just the subject matter. And then other people go deeper and they kind of look at the significance of you know, these products in our lives or this style of working, of making replicas of everyday products.
Yeah.
Yeah. And made it possible for artists like myself and other people to, you know, make fine art that goes in a gallery, you know, out of Cheez-Its.
Yeah. It's a great time.
Yeah.
And these pieces do not look at all like toys. I mean, they look from far away like actually the objects themselves. And when you do get close and close to them, you can see the detail down to the shading of mm-hmm. the cracker, down to actually my personal favorite is the nutritional box and how actually it's very illegible.
I know.
You don't understand what it is. And it's, that just reads true to a real life experience too, because who's looking actually?
Yeah, I don't think we're looking at that very much.
Some of us are,
yeah.
I suppose.
I don't think when you're eating a Cheez-It you are, though. That's kind of not the point.
Yes. The yeah. Cheez-It is the point.
Yeah, yeah. Totally.
So, okay, so speaking of working, this is a good transition,
yeah.
weirdly, into the spaces that you've shown your work.
Yeah.
And they've varied a lot, like mm-hmm. we established earlier, from window displays to the shops at the late Museum of Contemporary Craft mm-hmm. and the...
Rest in peace.
Rest in peace. And the OCAC store. Mm-hmm. And now at Wolf Gallery. So mm-hmm. those are some very different venues. Can you talk a little bit about your experience working with each of those separately? Like how do you feel like you were like well prepared, like this trajectory made sense to you in terms of working on commissions and then, you know, moving into the retail aspect?
I mean, I can't say that I can really observe my own trajectory because I'm just, you know, making stuff and trying stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm not a big planner or like career person. So I'm not really like thinking and building in that way. Yeah. But I can say what I like about my experience with Wolf Gallery and some other places is I really like how approachable it is from the street. Mm-hmm. You can look in the window and you can see the products on the wall. And that's what I really loved about doing storefront window displays. And so my Thanksgiving dinner that we talked about, I showed at this knitting store downtown, Knit Pearl, mm-hmm. 3 years in a row, actually, mm-hmm. at Thanksgiving for the month of November. And I had to, like, rework it every year. But people demanded it because mm-hmm. they loved it. And so I think the accessibility, I think that what runs through my work, a theme that runs through my work, whether it's making storefront window displays, having a production line and making multiples and selling them in a just a traditional retail space, or making artwork for a fine art gallery, is I want to make work that people can enjoy. And that and with storefront window displays, you know, you have access to the public.
Right.
I think it was Mohsin Hamid who said, and he wrote Exit West, Multnomah County's Everybody Reads book from last year. Mm-hmm. He said, I want to write a book that enables itself to be read. And I feel similarly about my work. that there's something about it that it's hard to do, to make work that a lot of people want to look at and have enthusiasm for. I think it looks easy, but it's hard to do. But that's my big goal. Yeah. And I think that that's kind of what is always driving me, no matter what the venue or the type of work is that I'm making.
Right. Yeah. Or who you're making it with.
Yeah.
Your various collaborators.
Right.
That's
yeah.
So true.
Okay. Yeah. Or whatever material it's in.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so cool.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO 90.7 FM. I'm Amanda Clem, and we are talking with LaBrie Rich about her exhibition of hand needle felted sculpture at Wolf Gallery in Southeast Portland up through October 28th. LaBrie, in your artist statement for Grocery, there's a piece that I wanted to read and talk about. The quote is, "The almost irresistibly soft texture of wool felt and the many hours of labor clearly spent on each piece invite us to slow down and reconsider our connection to these products. The work is both a tribute to and a critique of not only the foods that have shaped our lives and memories, but also their branding. Through Rich's careful rendering, each piece becomes a precious, tactile totem of our throwaway culture and an opportunity to reflect on our relationship to it." And there are a couple of things that I wanted to talk with you about. The first one that really that grabbed me was calling these pieces totems, and how they are objects of kind of like idolization and living in the Instagram culture and the awareness and camaraderie that we have around these products. And then in terms of celebrating them and also critiquing them, can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting because on the one hand, these objects are so beautiful to me. Like the Ritz logo is so beautiful. It's yellow. There, it sort of fades into gold. There's this faded blue in the background. All the front images of these products have like so much movement that's really beautiful. And if you think about it, you know, there's thousands of human hours that go into every one of these products. I mean, maybe tens of thousands, yeah, to make them as appealing as possible to the consumer.
Yeah.
You know, and so the graphic design is beautiful, the photography is beautiful, and it's something that we take for granted and we don't ever really look at. And so for me, it's a pretty slow process making these pieces. It took me a year to make 24 pieces. And so I've spent a lot of time with these packages and their graphics, and I've loved it. I love studying the movement of the text of Fritos, or, you know, like how the Hostess logo is seated on top of the donuts bag. So they're very beautiful to me, and I really respect the precision and the time that has gone into each one. At the same time, I feel like there's a way that we don't know anything about these products. They're showy, they're meant to distract and please us, but they're kind of, for the most part, empty calories. And I mean that in that every product that's in the show has soybean oil or corn or high fructose corn syrup in it.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing about the products in the show is that of all the, actually everything that's in the grocery store, almost every product is owned by one of the top 10 biggest food corporations in the world. So they're owned by these huge multinational conglomerates.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of interesting. So there's like this illusion of choice when you go into the grocery store, especially in America or like a westernized place,
right,
where you feel like you're getting to choose between you know, club crackers or saltines or Ritz,
mm-hmm,
or like any of the other 30 cracker, mm-hmm, options. And they're actually all owned by Pepperidge Farms.
Yep.
So yeah, it's a devotion to these products and the role they've played in our lives, and also the shadow side of them.
The shadow side of them. Turning something dark and unsavory into something really sweet,
mm-hmm,
and comforting.
Right. Yeah, because they're like very intimate friends to so many of us. You know, it's like memories of shopping with your parents, memories of food, comfort. You know, they're a part of our childhoods. They're a part of our consciousness. They're really companions in this, you know, modernized life. And do we know them? I don't know.
I don't know. Do you feel like you know them better now that you've spent so much time with these pieces?
Well, it's kind of interesting, you know, where I've gone with food and food culture is I'm really interested in food justice and local agriculture. So I really don't buy any of these products anymore,
yeah,
for myself or for my own cupboard.
Yeah.
But in spending the last year with them, I've kind of become friends with them. It's sort of interesting to, like, when I go to Plaid Pantry and I see the Fritos on the shelf, I sort of feel like a little warm sense of friendship towards Fritos. I think Fritos and I, like, our relationship has thawed.
It's on the mend. It's coming back around.
Right. Yeah, because they're a part of me and I can't deny that.
Do you have a favorite piece in your show? That's a hard question.
It is a hard question. You don't have to answer. They're all my children, Amanda.
Yes, you spent a lot of time.
I'm very fond of the Arm & Hammer baking soda and also the Jiffy Corn Muffin Mix.
Jiffy Corn Muffin Mix is a favorite also.
I think it's kind of, it's their proportions. They're sort of like little soldiers. They're like these little short boxes that are kind of stout, and they have a lot of text in them, which I really like rendering, and also I really like looking at.
They're very fun. These are interesting too, the Jiffy Corn Muffin Mix and the smaller boxes too. Some of them have more visible stitching on them.
Yeah.
And was that the very conscious thing that you wanted to leave in? Because not all of the pieces, some of the pieces are a little bit more seamless.
Right. Yeah, that's true. It kind of just depended on my mood, I guess. If I did contrasting stitching, then you can really notice it more. And towards the end, one of the last pieces I did was the C&H Sugar. And with that, I really played with having very visible stitching. It has a bunch of embroidery because there's dotted lines all over it. Mm-hmm. And so I did that as stitching. So it has a more handmade look. Mm-hmm. So that was fun to do. I worried a little bit that they were getting a tiny bit too slick because I was getting really good at doing this.
Incredible attention.
Getting really good at making fakes. So I sort of thought, oh, should I, make them a little bit more, have a little more juicy materiality?
Yeah.
And it was interesting photographing them too, because when the images are small, like on a postcard, a lot of times you almost can't tell unless you know what you're looking for that they're felt. So for the invitation, I made posters because when I blew up the image, then you could really see the detail of the handwork.
Yeah, otherwise it kind of just looks like a fuzzy, bad photo of the product.
Kind of, yeah. It's really interesting.
So we talked a little bit about your recent buying habits at the grocery store and how you're more interested now in local agriculture. And I know that that affects where you get your wool.
Mm-hmm.
Are there local farmers that you work with? Where do you source your material? Mm-hmm. And all the colors in these, I mean, they're very true to the products. So did you have to jump through a lot of hoops to get the fibers that matched the color that you were specifically looking for? Or how do you do that?
Well, I think the best story I have about trying to do a color match was I was trying to make the Fritos, like the actual Frito corn chip on the front of the Frito bag. And I had a little bit of this one fiber from Living Felt, which is a company online that you can buy different colors of fiber from. But I couldn't remember what it was. And so I emailed them and I said, I need to buy more of this fiber that's the color of a Frito. And they wrote back and they said something like, okay, well, we don't know exactly what color is a Frito. It could be linen or it could be soft yellow. So the best thing to do is to take a picture of your hand with the fiber that you have on a black background, and then we will color match that so you have your Frito color.
Wow, that is
amazing customer service.
That is amazing.
Yeah, so I took the picture and I sent it, and they said, oh, yeah, that's definitely, it was Soft Buttercup or some kind of goofy name. And so then they sent it to me, and I could finish the Fritos
that's
bag.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Isn't that
clutch.
Good?
I love that.
I know. It was really good. So I have some different sources for where I buy the fiber. Because the work is pretty small, it has to be pretty fine wool. Yeah. So I order a lot from Living Felt, and it's mostly merino wool that's domestically grown. And then also Imperial Stock Ranch in Central Oregon. I use some of their colors, and that's Columbia wool that's from Central Oregon. Mm-hmm. And then some of the fibers and the felt I buy from Gossamer, which used to be a brick and mortar store, and now it's a woman in Milwaukee, Rose. Shout out to Rose, who sells
Rose.
German wool felt.
Right.
And it's super high quality. So, it's not like craft felt that you get at a craft store that's made with polyester. It's very dense and beautiful.
Mm-hmm. And it's loose fiber.
I buy loose fiber from her and also sheet felt. That's 100% wool sheet felt.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. So when you're making the pieces too, how much are you able to blend the colors yourself? I mean, you're able to get very detailed. I mean, I had never needle felted prior to last weekend when I took one of LaBrie's workshops, needle felting little cakes, and highly recommend. just stab a bunch of things lots of times, and it's a really cute product at the end.
Yay.
It's very therapeutic, very cathartic. And it is incredible to me because you are doing it point by point with mm-hmm. one single needle. So mm-hmm. all of these pieces are made with one hand, one needle, over and over again.
Right.
For a long time, and you're able to get this incredible shading of the raisins and the dots candies mm-hmm. and all of that. So it's just really incredible.
Yeah. Yeah, so I mix the colors, you know, by blending the fibers together with my fingertips and then lay it down on the wool felt and then needle felt it from there. And I'm always just referring to the original and just trying to be true to the original.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
You've been working in fiber for a while now. You started in college, is that right?
Yeah.
And that is when you made the full-on Thanksgiving dinner replica. So every piece of a Thanksgiving dinner. Was that to scale?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. So to scale turkey, mashed potatoes, mm-hmm. the works.
Pumpkin pie, apple pie.
Two pies.
Candles with flames.
Oh, my goodness. So what prompted that project?
It was just a project in a design class, and I had been learning about felt for a couple years, and so it was just an exciting opportunity for me to experiment with felt. And I loved working with it, and the response that I got from it was really great.
Yeah.
So, you know, that was really fun, too.
Mm-hmm. And you work in other materials, like we talked about earlier, collage, so you work with other fibers but paper.
Yeah.
And mosaic,
yeah.
too. And you've done some public art projects, and you also do work a lot in the community teaching. So do you want to talk a little bit about your workshops that you do with PenFelt or
mm-hmm.
otherwise?
Yeah, I teach workshops. I teach workshops at my studio, which is in Southeast Portland, felting workshops, and then also at different fiber festivals. Those are felting workshops. And then I also teach community craft classes at the libraries, and mostly Multnomah County, but also Clackamas County, Washington County. Sometimes I stray across the river and go up to Vancouver. And my specialty is working with teenagers, yes. but I also do classes, you know, intergenerational classes and classes with adults. And I would say about half of that is different kinds of felting classes, and then the other half is just different kinds of crafts. And I've just always have been I was a crafty kid, and somehow it has become my job to, like, create really fun projects for the community to do.
Yeah.
And I get to meet all these incredible people all over the Portland area and beyond. And most of the time, there's no registration for the classes, so like two people show up or 32 people,
Ooh.
And I never know.
It's exciting.
yeah, so it's really great. Yeah, I'm so happy about it. Such a great gig.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Do you have any other projects in the works right now? Are you working on anything? Or, I mean, I know you just wrapped up your show at Wolf, so.
Yeah. Yeah, well, the Wolf show is up until the end of the month. So that's good. And I'm getting ready to go to UCross for 3 weeks, a residency in Wyoming. So I'm taking collage stuff. I'm taking some felting stuff. I'm having the idea of doing some shadow puppets.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's a pretty cool group of artists. We met in 2013 at the Rauschenberg residency. And then as a group, we returned there. And now we're going to UCross as a group. And there's performers, writers, visual artist, a painter. And so we'll work together on some projects.
That's great, a collaborative group. Do you have a name for your group?
We don't have a group name, no.
Maybe on this residency you can settle.
Okay, we will work on that. Yeah, so I actually don't know what that's going to be, but it's a creative adventure, and I'm really enjoying not planning for that.
Yeah, it seems like a residency at the end of finishing a body of work seems like a really good place to just start fresh.
Yeah.
Play with new ideas.
I think so, yeah.
Awesome. And for festivals, speaking of festivals,
yeah.
this October is Portland Textile Month.
Yeah.
Yay. So there's activities. I think this last weekend you did a First Friday Q&A at mm-hmm. Wolf Gallery about your show.
Yeah.
Is there anything else coming up that people can catch?
Yeah, it's great. This is the first year that we're doing it, Portland Textile Month, and there's all kinds of events. There's workshops and talks, panels. What's exciting to me about this month and the idea of this this kind of event is that it's a really interesting and diverse group of people. There's dyers, weavers, felters, people with fine arts backgrounds, people with fashion backgrounds. And there's an event almost every day in October in Portland.
That's exciting. Yeah. This is the first ever Portland Textile Month. So
it's happening.
Fiber fanatics, get out there.
Yes. We just had the launch party on October 1st at Textile Hive. And there were so many people who were so jazzed on textiles. It was pretty cool. People who sort of like talked with so much longing about, oh, I studied this in college. I've really been wanting to get back to it. And, you know, they have a calendar with, you know, like six different days circled and red pen. So I think there's some enthusiasm.
That's
yeah.
We'll
yeah.
look forward to seeing more about that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Libri, thank you so much for joining us today on Art Focus. It's been a pleasure to have you. Listeners, you have a chance to see Grocery at Wolf Gallery by Libri Rich up through October 28th. The gallery is open Wednesdays through Sundays. It's located at Southeast 28th and Southeast Ankeny in Portland, Oregon. And you can find out more information online at Wolf Gallery. That's WOLFFGALLERY.com. Or on Instagram at Wolf Gallery PDX. And you can find more about Libri's work on her website.
My website with my felt work and my felt workshops is penfelt.com. And my Instagram is at Libri Rich, LEBRIERICH.
I'm Amanda Clem, and you have been listening to Art Focus on KBOO 90.7 FM.
KBOO hosts a monthly film series at the Clinton Street Theater called KBOO at the Clinton. This month, on Thursday, October 11th at 7 p.m., we'll celebrate Dia de los Muertos. Muertos Film and Music Night will highlight some of the Dia de los Muertos traditions of Mexico, Central and South America. We'll screen authentic Day of the Dead short films and feature live performances by Virginia Lopez, Mariachi Portland, and more. Again, that's a film celebration of Dia de los Muertos, Thursday, October 11th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.